Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, I got some Vanderbilt fans out there kind of talking a little trash here. I got an email from Mark who says $100 on the V. That would be the Commodores, even up. And my response to Mark is not a chance. One way I can guarantee that Mizzou blanks the bet is I bet on them. I learned that lesson a long time ago. Like 20 years ago, I was in Vegas, and they were playing Troy. They weren't even Troy State at the time. We were playing at Troy, which I don't even know where the hell that is. I think it's down in Georgia or something like that. And we were huge favorites. Oh. And I bet on them. And then we lost the game. Not only did we not cover, but we lost the game outright. So
we didn't cover.
Okay. Yeah, that was when I decided not to bet on the Tigers anymore. John Ziegler is back with us this afternoon. We talk media bias a lot because he is the host of the podcast, The Death of Journalism. But he also had another podcast called With the Benefit of Hindsight that focused on Jerry Sandusky. And look, Sue, you and I, we've talked about this over the last couple of years. I've known John since right around 2009. We brought him here for a documentary he made about Sarah Palin. We became friends. I would see him every once in a while when I was in L.A. But even when I saw him going down the Jerry Sandusky, Joe Paterno, you know, rabbit hole, I'm like, John, what the hell are you doing? Here's the problem. I listened to the podcast, and I listened to the receipts that Mr. Ziegler brings to the table when he makes this very impassioned case, and it's extremely complicated, but he's got another piece of the puzzle that has been released, an interview with the wife of one of the trial accusers. And John, I'm sorry that was a long intro, but it's a very complicated topic, so I wanted to kind of set it up a little bit because we can't cover all of the dynamics of this, but you did get a very interesting interview, and I've listened to a good portion of this, so I wanted to get you on here to explain the latest here. It's very interesting.
Well, I appreciate that. And look, I understand why everyone, including yourself, when they hear that I'm declaring that the most notorious serial pedophile of the 21st century was actually totally innocent, that they think, you know, what are you smoking? That seems utterly impossible. But as you know, I am not only not a conspiracy theorist, I'm an ardent anti-conspiracy theorist. And I also go by the facts and the logic, and this has been the worst thing that's ever happened to my life and my career, but I'm 100% right about what transpired here, and I believe that we've further proven that case with this interview to which you refer. Here's the short version of what happened. Right. So Jerry Sandusky has recently appealed once again in the state of Pennsylvania. By the way, serial pedophiles, Mark, do not appeal after they are convicted.
Right.
They usually kill themselves even before that. But this case is completely different on 100 different levels. And in this most recent appeal, one of the things that the defense is claiming is that two key prosecution witnesses have recanted their testimony. One of them is so-called victim number 10, a guy by the name of Ryan Rittmeyer. Now, the problem with this is I have interviewed Ryan Rittmeyer for about 2.5 hours, although we've not been able to make it public. It's on tape. I have it in my computer. I may, may make it public at some point. But Ryan Rittmeyer has recanted a lot of his testimony, but not all of it, because I believe he's holding on to a fig leaf because he either doesn't want people to come after him for his $5 million that he got from Penn State, or that he doesn't want to admit that he lied about the whole thing. But he's basically saying he lied about like 90% of his claims, both at trial and when he got the $5 million from Penn State. Well, lo and behold, his wife contacts me when she hears about this situation and says, let me tell you the real story about what happened with Ryan Rittmeyer's claim against Jerry Sandusky and how I, meaning her, went from not having any idea who Jerry Sandusky was back in 2011 when this story broke, and then believing that my husband was molested by him as a child and believing he's 100% guilty, to now being 1,000% sure my husband was never molested by Jerry Sandusky and that Jerry Sandusky is clearly an innocent man. Now, you have to listen to the interview, which we released today, which is almost 2 hours long. We put out a 15-minute clip on YouTube, which is easily findable, to get the full context of this. But this is not just her opinion, Mark. This is based upon her own first-hand witnessing and testimony regarding the evolution of her husband's story. By the way, after listening to my last episode of With the Benefit of Hindsight, she has decided to divorce Ryan Rittmeyer because she has concluded that he's a lying sack of crap.
So, yeah, let me focus in on that because I heard, I heard that portion. So, basically, that she listens to the podcast, the last episode before this one, and that's where she sort of, I don't know if she makes her entire decision to divorce him, but she hears things in that that are quite troubling, I'm guessing.
Right. She learns a lot about, one, first of all, that he's cheating on her. That's a big part of it. Then also that she becomes convinced that he lied about Sandusky. She then does her own research, reads a book from an author by the name of Mark Pendergrast, who was a very well-respected author, wrote a book called The Most Hated Man in America. And she reads that book and she realizes, oh, my God, I took part in a moral panic to destroy this man's life. We got paid $5 million because of it, but an innocent man is going to die in prison. And, you know, we put out a video clip of how my interview with this woman, Jasmine is her name, ended. It's only like 2.5 minutes long, but when I ask her the question, so what would you say to Jerry Sandusky if you had the chance? She literally breaks down.
Yeah, look, I have that audio, so I don't have the whole 2 minutes, but let me play like 90 seconds of this, John. Here you go.
What would you say to Jerry Sandusky if you had the opportunity to send him some sort of a video or voice message?
I would hope that everything works out for him. It's heartbreaking to think that he seems to have dedicated his whole life to helping kids, and now he's sitting in jail accused of doing like the worst thing to kids. And I was married to one of them and I defended Ryan all these years. I love Ryan so much. I still love him. I'll always love him. I hope everything works out for him, really. But I mean, this man is so old and he seems like such a sweet person and he's sitting in prison. He's probably going to die there with people thinking that he's a pedophile. And that's devastating. And I really hope that he could get some kind of a new trial and somebody will tell the truth somewhere.
Okay, so a couple of things. You mentioned that he's going to be divorced from her. Why does she have legitimacy in her side of the story if she's going to divorce? You know, maybe she's got motivations against the ex-husband or the soon-to-be ex-husband. Why believe her?
Well, listen to the interview. She has firsthand testimony and details as to how the story evolved and Ryan's first reaction when she was the person who told him that Jerry Sandusky had been arrested. And she witnessed his first police interview. And so she goes through the whole thing. And the whole time she's like, huh? What? But she buys into it because you have to understand the level of the moral panic at the time. I mean, you guys had a much smaller situation involving Ms. Yu about, 7 or 8 years ago, where you guys all lost your minds and a lot of people lost their jobs because of it. Well, that was...
Oh, you mean the football team when they had the protests and the players didn't want to play and all that? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That was a moral panic. and people lost their minds. Well, this was 1,000 times worse. And you had the entire media world telling everybody that Jerry Sandusky was a pedophile, that these accusers were you know, heroes. And, of course, you got Penn State essentially pleading guilty by firing Joe Paterno and putting over $100 million on the table literally the next day. People come out of the woodwork with nothing but lies. And the narrative is impossible to reverse at this point, especially when the person at the center of this, Jerry Sandusky, is incredibly naive and was ill prepared for the onslaught that he was going to receive, because he honestly believed, as a very Christian person, that Jesus was going to take care of all this, that the system couldn't be this broken, these guys couldn't possibly testify against me because they all loved me, and even into adulthood, which is 100% true, including Ryan. His first reaction to his wife Jasmine, who you just heard there, was, "What? Jerry's the greatest guy I've ever met. How could this possibly be
so
real?"
So that was his reaction,
yes,
when he finds out about that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So on the interview that you haven't released with Ryan, why? I don't know if I picked up on exactly why that hasn't been released.
Unfortunately, everything about this case is complicated.
Okay.
The reason, the guy who is trying to get Ryan to recant, and I made a deal about how the interview would be released. And after the interview was done, he, I think, reneged on the deal. And he's been threatening to sue me if I release the interview, which I don't think he has any case. But I actually also wanted to give room for Sandusky's attorneys to file the appeal. I didn't want to do anything to screw that up for him. So I just decided discretion was the better part of valor. And frankly, even though the interview with Ryan is fascinating, because as you might expect, Mark, I go after him pretty hard for about 2.5 hours.
Imagine. Right.
And it is very, 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 very clear, even before I ever met Jasmine, that Ryan is lying about Jerry Sandusky. He was never abused by Jerry Sandusky. It couldn't be more clear. But I actually think Jasmine's interview, which is blockbuster, I mean, it is so good. I'm not overstating it. She is so credible when you listen to her. It's so detail-oriented. We take her step by step through the story. And it's not just like she has suspicion that he wasn't abused. She's positive of it.
Yeah, interesting.
Because she lived it. And by the way, she's not just his wife. She's the mother of two of his children. I mean, this has been a 15-year relationship. They got married the week the Jerry Sandusky story exploded, so she remembers everything about this. She couldn't be a better witness, even without the emotional catharsis and climax at the end, which you just played.
With the benefit of hindsight, is the podcast that John's done on the Sandusky case, for the benefit of a question I'm about to ask you, explain just in you know, short form here, who Mike McQuarrie is and how he's a part of this story.
Well, he's the one that people probably still remember all these years later, even though it's 14 years later. He's the former Penn State assistant coach, then a graduate assistant, who allegedly witnessed, in the minds of most people, a sexual assault in a Penn State locker room. And that, for most people, I totally understand. They think that's game, set, match.
Right,
and
right.
If that story was true, or even close to true, I would be the first one standing up and saying, I don't care what the problems are with the other witnesses. If that happened, then obviously Sandusky's a pedophile and he's guilty and everybody should be presumed to be telling the truth. But our first episode of the podcast, With the Benefit of Hindsight, breaks down that episode in a way that I believe leaves it completely lacking in any credibility whatsoever. In every possible way, including, by the way, who the actual boy in the shower was. We know that person. He never testified at trial. He said constantly, as a sergeant in the Marine Corps many years later, that Jerry was the greatest thing that ever happened to him, that there was no assault. McQuarrie was wrong. By the way, McQuarrie's own testimony was manipulated by prosecutors. We have emails from McQuarrie complaining to prosecutors about that. I mean, he got the date, the month, and the year of the episode wrong, not once, but twice, catastrophically wrong. He didn't go to see Joe Paterno the next morning as he claimed it was 6 weeks later. I believe I've proven that through the timeline, which is not consistent with someone seeing a sexual assault. He never went to police. He never got the boy out of a dangerous situation. He never confronted Sandusky. None of it is consistent
with the bizarre. It really
is. The story that we were told.
Yeah, the whole thing is just nuts. And then, you know, even on something like this, John, where you're getting a lot of traction and people are checking it out, and I certainly wanted to talk about it, there's no mainstream attention to this at all. I mean, are they even talking about it in, you know, at Penn State in Happy Valley?
Well, other than you, there is a media blackout on this, although somehow that clip that you just played was seen over 500,000 times on X alone. I don't know how the heck that happened, and a lot of time, you know, and many other views on Facebook and TikTok, but look, this story is too old, it's too complex, it's yeah. too toxic, nobody cares about the truth, and the most bizarre part, Mark, for people don't care about the story, what I find fascinating from a psychological perspective is every time it comes back up, and I see, you know, you'll see me respond to hundreds of people on X about
I know,
this.
And I love to see the responses, I read them, but go ahead.
Oh, they're hilarious
yeah, I
if
know.
You know anything about the case, but the level to which people really want to believe this happened, this horrible story happened, is mind-boggling to me. There was once upon a time, 12 years ago probably, when I came to this conclusion, maybe 11 years ago, that I thought, you know, people are going to be happy that I'm telling them that nobody got sexually abused.
It's the opposite.
This horrific thing didn't happen. It's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
I'm the bad guy because I've destroyed their dark fairy tale that for some reason they became very invested in. And, you know, as Mark Twain or whoever said it, it's far easier to dupe somebody than to convince them that they've been duped. And that's really what we have in this story.
One of the things that I think personally gives you some more authenticity here, and I know you've spoken to this issue before, and he's passed away, but Franco Harris became a friend of yours, and he was someone who was very interested in the story that you were telling.
Franco Harris, for people who don't know, obviously the Pittsburgh Steeler Hall of Famer, Immaculate Reception. He was a Penn State graduate, a huge supporter of Joe Paterno when this controversy happened. Franco and I became very, very close. I miss him every day. I've told many, many stories about the times we have spent in bunkers on this story together. Franco Harris confronted the aforementioned Mike McQuarrie at Joe Paterno's funeral in the middle of a firestorm. This is like 2 months after the whole story breaks. Everyone is wondering what the heck did Mike really see. Franco Harris, a man with enormous amounts of gravitas, a large man, a man who's a legend in Pennsylvania. You do not lie to Franco Harris, especially under those circumstances. And Franco Harris came away after questioning Mike McQuarrie, I believe, more pointedly than any attorney ever did in the entire process, came away completely and 1,000% convinced Mike McQuarrie didn't see anything.
Yeah. Fascinating. Well, listen, the 2-hour interview is up there. I started listening to it on my way in today. John can be followed at Zygmunt Freud, Zygmunt, F-R-E-U-D. Interesting stuff. Can't wait to see what happens next. Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right,
Thank you.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Sue, remember last week I was talking about Christmas lights, and I was dealing with the company Santa's Elves that does my lighting, and I mentioned, I think, that last year, I'm pretty sure I was the first one on my block, and I was shocked because it was before Halloween to have Christmas lights up, right? So yesterday, I'm looking in my neighborhood, and my lights are not up, but half of my neighborhood already has Christmas lights on their home.
Oh, but not lit.
No,
on
no,
the home.
Nobody's flipped them on
you
yet.
Get
but
a
I mean,
discount early? Is that the deal?
Well, again, these companies are in such demand that if they don't start doing this, a lot of these people kind of do it on the side, right, if you will. But if they don't start putting the lights up now, they'll never get to all of the demand. So it's just, it's weird because I started looking around like, oh my God, it's like 70% of the neighborhood already has the lights on.
Jeez.
And I'm guessing that mine, I'll go home one of these days this week and mine will be up there as well. My lights look better than theirs, though. I'm just
well,
telling
of course.
You.
I mean, I
have. I'm going green and red again this year. And
that's unusual.
They look really good.
Okay.
Yeah. Most people do like the bright white ones.
Oh, I see.
It's not my thing. I don't like it. I don't like that.
You're going festive.
I'm going festive. That's right.
I like it.
You know who went festive? Were the thieves that broke into the Louvre yesterday, right?
This is nuts.
It is. And you know what's interesting is this was not a theft of art masterpieces hanging on the walls. In fact, they didn't even care about that, right?
No. Nope.
They were looking for precious metals and jewelry that they can get their hands on. So one thing that they stole was a tiara that once belonged to Queen Hortense that contained 24 Ceylon sapphires.
I think that's right, but I'm not sure what it means.
And 1,083 diamonds that they say could be,
jeez,
offloaded individually for jewelers to reset undetected. Any gold that they escaped with? I mean, gold, what, like $4,000 an ounce or something like that? So the guy who was the former leader of the London Police Force's art squad says this was not really an art crime. It was a commodity theft.
That's right. They think that somebody actually had these people, had these people do the deed for them.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but they did this in, it wasn't even the middle of the day, right? It was
at
the beginning of the morning.
And what they do is they go, of course, into that construction area where you can kind of slip in. They're wearing the construction outfits. And they go up, take a crane up, and are able to break through a window, get in there, threaten the guards, and they're out within 7 minutes and on scooters. And
that's what they did?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And they dropped a crown, one of the crowns. Some of this was Napoleon's wives' stuff. I mean, it was crazy. And it was broken. But they think, they'll just melt down all the metal and recut every stone so nobody can tell what it is and make a bunch of money.
Yeah, they said that they're talking about potential security lapses at the museum. Oof. But I guess that this is part of a bit of a wave. So they mentioned at the National Museum of Natural History in Paris, there were thieves that went in with a blowtorch and a grinder, and they stole gold nuggets worth about $700,000.
Right? Oh, yeah. And it's harder, right? If you're going to break down the piece, nobody's going to buy the crown of Napoleon's wife. But they'll take all those diamonds and melt down the gold.
In Germany, thieves stole a giant gold coin worth several million euros from the Bode Museum in 2017. They rolled it out in a wheelbarrow.
Oh!
2 years later, you had members of a Berlin crime syndicate that broke into the green vault rooms of the Royal Palace, and they stole more than 100 million euros worth of jewels, about $116 million. In 2022, they stole a cache of 483 ancient gold coins worth an estimated $1.7 million from a museum in southern Germany. So this is not brand new, but they're getting, I don't know, maybe they're getting a little bit more bold when they're doing this during the middle of the day. But look, if you've got professionals that are going in there and they know that there are security lapses and they got everyone, the tour groups are starting to come in for the morning, they knew what they were doing. They probably rehearsed it and they got out of there. It doesn't seem like they have any leads in this case, do they?
No.
Right.
Four guys did it. And but the place is huge. You go to the Louvre and you think, I had this thought, how are they possibly covering all this?
Yes. Yeah, so
right?
They,
just with the amount of protection, how can you?
They used a truck mounted with a basket lift, which you use for furniture. If you're lifting furniture into the apartments, and think of Manhattan or Paris, big city like that, you'd need something to lift the couch up. You're not bringing it up all the, the stairs in the elevator. So they park it outside the palace. They ride to the balcony outside of one of the areas. They slice through the window with cutting tools. That's where they grab the stuff, and they're done. Like, to your point, it was And I think that they didn't have any guns or anything like that, right? Mm. They threatened the staff with angle grinders. This story from NBC says the otherwise unarmed thieves then smashed through two display cases, taking necklaces, tiaras, and brooches from France's now dispatched royal families. This all played out right after the museum had opened. Bystanders able to video one of the suspects in high-visibility vests standing at one of the glass boxes. I haven't seen any of the video yet.
Oh, I haven't either. I look forward to it. But you could just break all that down, take a brooch, take off some diamonds, and those giant stones especially can be cut down into little ones, and they'll just make a fortune.
They say that they're a little puzzled as to why the thieves left behind a 140-carat Regent diamond, which had been valued at $60 million. Had they wandered down that opulent corridor, they would have reached the Mona Lisa. It, you know, itself stolen more than a century ago. So that's kind of interesting. And to your point, yeah, they made off on two scooters.
Yeah, they don't want to take the Mona Lisa. You can't unload that.
No.
Jewelry and money was the point.
Exactly. And this will be fascinating to see if they ever catch these guys,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it will.
It'll be interesting. They say right now it's a race against time.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Time. Big birthday party week for 97.1 FM Talk. The official 25th anniversary was last Thursday. We're going to celebrate this Thursday at the Lit Cigar Lounge. We have the VIP tickets, which are sold out. Perhaps you'd find them on StubHub. They cost $30. They might be going for like $32 or $34 bucks up there. You can check. But if you RSVP at 97.1talk.com, on our website, you can just show up and have a little fun. We're going to have some names and blasts from the past there on Thursday afternoon. Looks like our weather is going to cooperate. We'll be doing the entire show. I think basically it's not going to be my show, Sue. It's being
taken over
by the celebration of the anniversary, which is fine. So I may just be hanging out. I might even be talking. I'm going to let Cox do all the work.
You'll talk.
A little bit, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll
see. That's how that works.
Hey, George Rosenthal is back with us from ThrottleNet at ThrottleNet.com. There were a couple of issues related to the interwebs that we thought we'd discuss with George this afternoon. Mr. George, how are you this afternoon?
Doing great. Thanks so much for the opportunity. And yeah, it's always always entertaining out there in the tech world, isn't it?
Yeah, so what happened as the day started early today with some stuff with Amazon being out? Now, was there nonsense going on with hackers, et cetera, or was this something different?
So they are saying this was not a cyber attack. The rumor is actually a little more disturbing.
Uh-oh.
Because, well, not on an evil level, but it's more disturbing on a human error level. The rumor, again, this is a rumor. I don't want Amazon coming after me. But this is a rumor that someone used AI to write code, software code, did not proof it, did not check it, loaded the code and crashed a set of servers, which then set a domino effect and crashed a major part of their cloud.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. So I'm not an expert, but that doesn't sound good if that's what happened.
I have
right?
No
I'm
idea.
Not, I don't have your level of expertise. That yeah. does not sound good though, right?
You don't need to be an expert to know that you better not trust AI fully. That's all I'm saying. Even in your day-to-day work life, please check the work of AI before you submit it as your actual work. And again, that's a rumor because that's not confirmed. But if that's the case, I mean, you're talking about somebody who did not check artificial intelligence and took down I mean, things like Fortnite and Snapchat. Mm. It took down Slack and Duolingo and Venmo. All the processing of, you know, sending
all
of money with Venmo.
Oh.
It took down Robinhood, the stock trading app. It took down all of the Echo services. It took down all of the Ring camera and alarm system services.
What?
Because because this is all owned by Amazon. And here's the thing. Look, there's only a handful of cloud providers like Google, Amazon, IBM, you got Oracle. There's a handful of major companies with huge data centers that are handling all of these large applications, these large businesses. And the problem is, if you put all your eggs in one basket and that basket goes away, your business is out. So,
dang.
I mean, yeah, it affected a massive amount of large companies.
All right, so then what happened to get people back online?
Yes.
So, again, the exact thing is that I don't think they're fully back because my home alarm system's not working, so I will be staying home tonight.
Can you give me your address in case I'm interested in looting, George, by any chance?
Oh, my gosh.
I'll be staying home tonight because my ring's down still. So, yeah. But once they get, as they're getting it back up, it was only down totally for a few hours this morning, and they're slowly getting things back up and running. But, again, it's a matter of human error and too much trust in artificial intelligence at this point.
Wow.
Yeah, that's nuts. Now, let me ask you a question, because these things have been in the news lately. In St. Charles County, they had one that was proposed, got shot down. These data centers that are more and more necessary because of AI in particular. Seemingly, there's going to be, I mean, obviously the demand for that is going to continue to skyrocket, but it also seems like there's some concern about where to place these things. There's a NIMBY aspect of it, et cetera. How is that going to kind of work itself out?
Well, what's wild is you think about these massive data centers with 100 acres plus of a building, but it doesn't take as many people to operate. Yeah, there's a lot of jobs to build them, but to operate them doesn't take a lot of people. What you need is electricity. You need massive amounts of electricity. So they're going to be placing these in areas where they can either build their own power plant. Like Microsoft bought the nuclear power plant in Three Mile Island, and they're going to restart it. They're going to own the power plant,
right.
Microsoft is, and then they're going to resell overspill to the state.
I love that.
Yeah, we had that.
That's brilliant.
It is brilliant.
You know, that's the biggest problem right now is electricity. And, you know, if you think about adding 100 million electric cars on the grid, then you throw in these data centers, you need massive amounts of electricity to operate all this. And that's really why they're picking certain geographic areas. Also, in regions of the country, you know, middle of the country is a really good place to be. There's not a lot of hurricanes out here in Missouri. You do have a potential for an earthquake, but, you know, that's something that they're looking at when they put these billions and billions of investment in is location and then being able to spill data across the country and spread out their liability, basically.
So ChatGPT is not something that I've really experimented with very much. My wife uses it a lot, though. She uses it for work. But I think even last night when I was watching football, I saw a commercial and it showed, you know, a young couple that wanted to plan a vacation, and they just kind of spit some things into the search engine, and, you know, you got a whole itinerary for your vacation.
Crazy.
So there's aspects of this that are a little overwhelming and kind of cool, and certainly things that would be you know, useful in our everyday lives. However, as a parent of a 10-year-old, I get concerned about some of this stuff. And there's some new things that they're doing to provide teen users more age-appropriate experiences, which you would have thought maybe they would have done in the first place. But is that potentially something that is going to work?
Yeah, I hope so. I really do. Because remember last time we were on, we were talking about that poor kid who killed himself. And AI, meaning specifically ChatGPT, told him 1,247 times to do it, and then described how to do it, and then described how to tie the noose so it would hold his weight in the closet. It was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. Then it went to court, and finally now ChatGPT is implementing parental controls. Thank goodness. I mean, this needs to be across all AI platforms. I mean, you know, the mental illness and mental challenges out there is already tough enough. It's even worse when your best friend becomes AI and tells you to do things that are just actually awful. What's nice, though, is that they're going to be setting up things like quiet hours, being able to turn off the ability to talk to it with your voice, being able to create pictures. A lot of these teenagers are getting into big trouble because they're using AI to create images do damage to their friends or their ex-friends at school. And, you know, a lot of these things are needed to be done a long time ago. I'm just so glad that finally something good is coming out of that poor tragedy of that kid committing suicide. It's something that really needs to be focused on by the government. And, you know, like I always say, I don't like government regulation all the time, but this is an instance where we have got to have it. AI is getting more and more sophisticated by the day, not the week or the month, by the day. And it's something where our teenagers are going to be living a completely different experience than we did.
It really is frightening. And I, you know, I'm horrified to hear. These are things Sue and I probably would never think about, that there's high school kids out there that are creating, you know, images that could be embarrassing to a fellow student or an ex-friend or something like that from ChatGPT. So that, you know, that's amazing. But I've seen the power. I've seen some cool things that you can do with it. So I understand, you know, the nature of its benefits, but still scares the hell out of me.
Hey, George, when you say it's getting stronger every day, is it feeding on itself? Are we feeding it more? How does that happen?
So they are feeding it every piece of information. It's getting fed more and more data. But here's the thing. It's learning based off of the millions and millions of people using its conversations.
Ugh.
That's one of the parental controls, actually, is for the parents to be able to remove the conversations from AI's memory so that it doesn't take their kids' privacy away. And that is something, because it's learning off of all the users. Everything you type into AI is being saved somewhere in a database, and it's learning not only about you, but all about human nature and how to handle certain human topics when it's brought up. And this is one thing that thank goodness ChatGPT is implementing, that they're going to have reviewers, meaning let's just say a kid says something bad, they're depressed, they're getting close to doing a bad act to harm themselves. ChatGPT will alert a person at ChatGPT, and then they will contact the parent directly. Through text messages, emails, and phone calls, which is fantastic. So, they are really taking this seriously, and thank goodness they are going to take it this seriously. But AI is learning off of everything we do on a daily basis. So it's growing and growing and growing. And like I said, Sam Altman, CEO of OpenAI, even said we're only a few years away from artificial general intelligence, and AGI is when it becomes smarter than any human that's ever lived.
So that's why, and I remember talking to you when 60 Minutes did that story, and I have my own questions about the veracity of the journalism on 60 Minutes. We've made that very clear. But when they did that story, I think it goes back a year and a half, 2 years ago, about AI and, you know, concerns about it basically taking over. I took that very seriously. And look, some members of Congress have talked about this and focused on it. I hope this administration is looking at it, because there are some serious challenges in the future to how this is going to all integrate with our lives. Hopefully in a more positive way, but there's some scary stuff out there as well.
It really is. It's absolutely unbelievable how fast it's going. There's some amazing things, though. If you use it on the daily, and I would encourage you to use either OpenAI or Grok, which is Elon Musk's version. You know, it's X version called Grok. It's really, really wild what it can do and helping you with everything from just research on the internet, answering certain questions, trip planning, like you said, creating pictures. I don't know if you've seen some of the songs, and I'll text you some of these. Some of the songs that they've taken that artists have obviously, you know, written and sung over the years and turned them into something totally different in a genre. For example, like a Tupac song, they turn into a 1950s soul band, and it's dynamite.
Okay, send me those. So I want to see some of that stuff.
Those.
Right. Yeah.
Look up on YouTube, for those of you out there listening, you can look up AI generated. It's I believe it's just type in soul, S-O-U-L, music, AI. And some of the music is just dynamite. So yes, there's a lot of positives with AI. But there's some negatives, like all human nature is going to find out. The key is making sure these teenagers can't circumvent these measures that are being
put
in place.
They'll figure it out.
Sure they will.
Yeah. Look, you know, I guess maybe, and I love technology and I love to use new technology, but I think this is certainly an area that's been very well established. So I'm intimidated by it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it scares me a little bit, but I see my wife using it all the time, and it simplifies, you know, a lot of the things that she does in her work. So I know the positives of it as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what's wild is when you tie it into your home, you know, you walk into your house and you greet it like a person that's been at your house all day long, starts turning on lights. You tell it what, you know, turn on the TV and turn, you know, change the lighting in the room to this. And this is all stuff you can get, you know, at Best Buy and then have AI control all of it. It's going to impact our lives in such a wild way, you know, driving your car, being able to talk to it, recognizing patterns and things that you're doing, and then relating that into everyday life, into your refrigerator, your microwave, your vehicles, your computers at work. And then that one AI is literally helping you throughout your day based on your daily habits. It's going to be fascinating where we're heading. It really is.
And will the movie Eagle Eye come to fruition? That is the question.
I know we had talked about that before. And you know what, Sue? After you mentioned that, I went back and watched that movie again. It is a... It's a fantastic movie that was way ahead of its time.
Yeah, no kidding.
In a scary way.
I remember when you brought that up. All right, George, always great to have you on. Thank you.
Great to talk to you. Thanks so much. Right.
Throttlenet.com.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Okay, Ethan's going to help me with this one just a little bit here. And Sue, you are no novice when it comes to sports. You watch sports. Have you ever seen a situation where, and this happened with the Chiefs, so they are fourth down and 1 yard to go. They're at their 40-yard line to start the second quarter. They lead 7-0. So a lot of times teams will line up to go for it to try to get the first down on fourth down, right?
Right.
A lot of times what they'll do is, oh, it'll look like they're doing that, but they're trying to draw the other team offsides, right?
Yeah.
So they do the snap count, and they see if anyone's going to move. And then usually at that point, they either take the delay of game, which puts them in a maybe a little bit better position for a punt, or they may have to take a timeout, right? So, Ethan, as you know, the Chiefs did this yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they look like they're going for it. And I'm going to play the audio here. You hear Mahomes call out, blue 80 set, hut, hut, hut. And then nobody moves, right? So then he says, now I'm just going to have to play it to you, and you'll kind of react afterwards. So this is what it sounded like on the air, although there was some profanity.
On fourth and a foot. Tried to draw him offside.
So he said,
okay, that's funny.
He goes, this blanking never works, man. He seems like he's angry about it, right? Well, then he snapped the ball.
Sorry. Mahomes says, Coach, it doesn't.
Oh, there they go.
Work.
They
keep
faking
it.
There they go. You'd give it up on that one. You thought for sure it was a draw, didn't you?
So it was a complete fake out. He even flipped his palm skyward. He looks toward the sky, thinking that he was angry at his coaches for attempting a silly try to draw them offsides, but it was all a facade. So the Raiders were caught off guard, and it worked. They hand off to Kareem Hunt. He plows through the hole, and they get 3 yards, and they continue on a drive. And let's face it, it was the Raiders. They really didn't need this. They would have beat them by that many points probably anyway, but that was pretty funny, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, Pat Mahomes, best supporting actor
for
perhaps,
sure.
For
it was
that,
something
right?
Straight out of The Longest Yard.
I know.
Hilarious.
I love it. And then, okay, I'm just going to do one political one, too. This is new. This is KJP trying to make the case on a podcast that, you know, Joe Biden was talking all the time to the media.
We did have legislative wins.
Sure, and but he didn't talk about them that well, so he couldn't talk about them. He wasn't campaigning.
First of all, he did talk about them. Whether it broke through or not, he did. Tim, he did talk about.
He talked less to the press than Donald Trump does. Way less.
That's Tim Miller. Okay, way less. Are you kidding me?
I mean,
Trump's out there every single day.
Right.
There were weeks, not
yes.
just a week, weeks. And whenever he did speak to the press, it was always very limited, right? Mm-hmm. There might have been something as he's waving before he stumbles to get on Air Force One. For her to make the case that somehow he communicated in any way, shape, or form close to the amount of transparency we're seeing from this administration, I don't care what you think about Trump, but you cannot make that argument. That is just stupid. And we saw a lot of stupid from KJP over the years. Let's face it.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.